So I'm sort of plowing through section by section.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we need to have some meat and then we can sign it in.
Yeah, exactly. So right. So a couple of things that I did mention that I wanted to talk about.
Right. So yeah, you have three things there. One is monitoring, provisioning, and mapping. Right. So those three, you were asking if.
Right.
So they make sense, of course. They make. So there are definitely things that should be in there.
Yeah, I just wanted to hold on. Let me find the email in the wrong vicinity. I just realized that forgot about the internal clearance. The Fastlane, were you able to upload things to Fastlane? The CV and current and pending support? Because they need to see that before they can go through internal clearance.
Yeah, my things are all ready, so I can do it.
Okay. All right, so. Well, anyway,
about 8:30-ish on September 30th.
September 31. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, never mind. So, I think the first thing is to distinguish the fact that we have offline profiles of workloads, cache requirements, and that's based on the ERSS tree. So offline, this could be done even in production in an online scenario if we can dedicate resources to workload.
Yeah.
So the key is to eliminate any sort of contention and create this profile, right? And the profile that we'll create is the ERSS tree model, where we have basically a tree of hierarchical cache requirements, and
basically a tree of phases.
Tree of phases, yeah. And phases, smaller phases are embedded in larger phases and such.
That's
right.
That's true.
And the key annotation there with each node is the reuse rate and flood rate at that specific node.
So we are assuming this staging area for the workload.
May or may, like I said, may or may not. We may be able to do it in a production environment in an online fashion if you're able to dedicate resources that are distinct from or free of contention. Right? It may not be a dedicated staging environment. But yeah, in effect, that would be the outcome. Right. So we'll have the ERSS free model.
I had a question there saying the online generation of ERSS.
Could be, yeah. That would be a useful addition and maybe something practical as well. I still need to figure out how we can do that in an easy way. But regardless, we have that offline model, and then we have a problem, or we have sets of problems that require us to map this tree to a cache hierarchy.
And before that, so ERSS tree, where does it stand with respect to the MRCs? Is that already
ERSS3? ERSS3 is sort of a superset of an MRC.
Yeah.
Every knee point in the MRC would be like mapped to one of the nodes of the ERSS3.
Okay.
But the ERSS3 is maybe higher resolution because if you have overlapping phases, the MRC would have to be built for every phase independently, and then you would have an equivalent of an ERSS tree. But if you have an MRC for the entire execution of the application, some of those ankles and knees may be lost because of overlaps.
Yeah.
So in that sense, the ERSS tree is a more detailed model.
Okay.
So now that we have all of these ERSS trees that have been constructed offline, and we have a couple of variants. But the first variant of the first variant problem is that we want to provision caches, right? So, and provisioning basically means sizing and specifying bandwidth requirements at every cache level in the hierarchy.
That last phrase that seems to be a challenge in my head. I don't even see this. If it's only one level, it seems it's clear what you know what to do. But what's with these levels? I have no idea what that means.
So you have a tree, right, which has multiple levels, and you have a cache hierarchy that also has multiple levels.
Right.
All of these tree levels at the same, all of the nodes at the same level of the tree would map to one specific level of the cache. Because we had to sort of essentially flatten the
tree
and map it
to... somehow generated in this manner with the idea that, with the knowledge that the cache has this many levels?
No.
So that was generated
independently.
Yes, so it's an arbitrary tree.
It's an arbitrary tree.
Okay, fine.
So you might have to collapse some of the levels, and maybe they would both fit into, or several levels would fit into the same cache level.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. So you're saying higher level nodes somehow should correspond to higher levels in the cache hierarchy?
Yes, larger working sets.
Because these are larger.
ERSS values. Yeah, would fit in higher levels of the memory hierarchy.
Okay, got it. But still,
Now the problem is that you have not one mapping, but several mappings to do, right? But we could probably, at least the first variant of the problem, which is provisioning caches, we can boil it down to mapping a tree into a set of cache level requirements, right? And then we could just take a union of all the cache level requirements and say, okay, here's our provisioning requirement. So we could do it that way. And the other thing which I specify in the problem, the formal problem, I don't know if I committed that or not.
Sorry to ask again. So each level of this ERSS tree corresponds to a different MRC? Or a different?
No. The whole tree is represented in a single MRC. It could be represented as multiple MRCs, because what you could do is construct an MRC for a single face, which would have a single knee point, right? Or you could construct it for the entire execution, which has lots of phases and phases embedded within other phases, and then you would start seeing a lot of knee and ankle points in the MRC.
Yeah.
But that's a combination of all of these phases. But when people talk about MRCs, they're talking about this combined MRC. They're not talking about phase granularity MRC.
No. I'm still not seeing that mapping very clearly, but fine, go ahead. Yeah.
What is mapping problem?
Mapping simply means which cache, where are you going to put this, put the actual cell, the cache line, right?
Okay. Let me make a tree, and then we can talk about this more concretely. So let's say we have a tree where you have a large space that is 500 megabytes. That's the largest endpoint. And then you have, within that 500 megabytes, you have a few of 50 megabytes each. And there's this, the model itself, it says that, okay, you could have multiple phases of 50 megabytes and such, right? So,
does something have to add up to something else?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Because this could be sort of a union of elements accessed in all of the phases
so there are some built in intercepts.
Yeah, this is a size number, but this the sizes may not add up because of the overlaps in actual elements.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you have such a tree, and you have a cache hierarchy, right? So a cache hierarchy where you have DRAM, you have maybe a single L3, maybe you have multiple L2s. One per processor, or one per something, and then you have multiple L1s below it, one per core, and of course you have the cores themselves. This is your hierarchy. Now, the provisioning problem is the following. Given that I have such an architecture already available, but the question is, what L3 should I buy, what L2 should I buy, and what L1 should I buy? Because the more money I spend, the larger the sizes of these guys, and maybe also more bandwidth to access each of these caches. That's why processors are very cheap and also very expensive, right? So the provisioning problem is, given not one but a set of workloads, how do you come up with a least cost provisioning of the system with a given architecture? Okay, does that make the problem more specific?
So the way it's the multiple workloads, and how did they interact would affect how much should we provision, right?
Yes, of course, right? That's why the problem is so difficult.
How do you know how would they interact? Their speed may change. Depends on CPU allocation.
That's true. So we had to make some assumptions. For instance, how is CPU allocated to these workloads?
Mm.
One of the things that the offline profile does is that it gives all potential CPU, the full CPU available to the workload. Right. So your rates, like you rightly pointed out, is going to be determined by the speed at which the workload runs in isolation, all of these rates. So besides the 50 megabytes, I have a reuse rate here and a flood rate here at each of the nodes. This is what the model gives you, right? And the ERSS paper talks about how to create this model in an offline manner. So this is one problem, right, which is the provisioning problem.
So I have a really question is, I think you mentioned a bit, is how to monitor the flood rate and reuse rate, which are not really available from hardware. But you didn't elaborate much on that, right? Do we have a solution on that?
To monitor flood rate and reuse rate?
Right.
Flood rate is largely equivalent to miss rate.
Okay.
Because if you're missing a lot, that means you're flooding a lot. If your miss rate is very small, then which means that you're not flooding much and the miss rate is, in that sense, approximately zero, right? And that's equal to flood rate.
Mm.
The reuse rate can be looked at as hit rate. So if you're hitting in the cache, the only way you can hit is if you reuse, right? Because you had accessed it at some point in the past. So hit rate and miss rates can be monitored at using hardware performance counters. And that gives you reuse rates and flood rates.
It's also assuming the workload is run on the staging area.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that's the first problem, which is a provisioning problem. The second problem is a mapping problem. In the mapping problem, you have not just an architecture, but an actual system with sizes and bandwidths for each of these guys. And then the question is, well, how do you map the workloads? And this mapping has a concept of admission control. Right? You may not be able to map all the workloads. You might have to throw away some of the workloads. And so mapping should allow for admission control. But these are all static, right? In some sense,
you do it once and you're done. But the real problem is a dynamic problem, that you need to monitor how flood rates and reuse rates change because the workload moves from one phase to the next phase and so on. Right? And also the intensity of the workload also changes.
Right, that's the other question about flood and reuse rates, is how do you differentiate the different workloads? If you monitor only miss rate and hit rate for the entire layer.
Oh yeah, so
well, that's the question, whether both are needed, right? That's what you were asking. Like what granularity do you
need? Yeah, first question is, do we need to monitor these quantities at a per workload granularity? And if there is no, then we have aggregate monitoring is easy.
The right answer is that, is that we have to do experiments assuming we have all the information, and then we can talk about which ones are really can be approximated. That's probably the best you can do.
Right. So there is this paper from the same guys who wrote RapidMRC. I'm familiar with that paper.
Like the Toronto guys.
Yeah, the Toronto guys had a previous paper called ROCKS or something like that, where they monitor per workload counters by sampling the performance counters with some interrupt frequency.
Right.
So, and they examine, for instance, if the counter reaches a certain value, the CPU interrupts the OS then looks at which process or which process did interrupt result in that interrupt. So it's a sampling based approach to per workload counters. So we could use that.
Okay.
I don't have all the answers. I'm
not. I buy that.
No, because I also looked at that, and it looks like all your rates can potentially be measured for at least a sample of the workloads, may not be for all of them.
Yeah.
So you could say, yeah, let's take some small percentage and then let it compute these guys and see if there's signs of trouble.
Right now, the reason I don't like our proposal is because it sort of it doesn't acknowledge sufficiently the unknowns. Although in my mind, I have a lot more unknowns than what shows up in the proposal. And it is important for this proposal to do that, otherwise credibility will be lost from whoever is reviewing the proposal. So I'm hoping that when I go into the sort of the finer touches to the proposal, I will focus exclusively on bringing up the difficulty of the problems and the unknowns and what people have done in relation to what we need to get to, right? That's going to be hard, but I'm hoping I have enough time to do it. So these are the problems that I feel I don't have enough confidence about approaches. So I'm hoping that I can get some help. And this is particularly important for the non-partitionable caches, but I think similar variants would also apply for the partitionable ones.
I have to say, I'm still not comfortable thinking in terms of the ERFS.
Okay.
So, for instance, this one, I still go back to the MRC and say, okay, how does that translate to whatever it is that you're saying? And I don't see it.
Okay. So let's try to map this ERFS into an MRC.
Right. So let's say you're given two or three different MRCs for the multiple workloads. How are you going to take a hypothetical one and tell me how you're going to map, because I don't, let's assume that you have only two levels of the hierarchy. Tell me how you're going to map this.
So this to this?
No, from the MRC
to ERFS to the MRC.
Forget the ERC, ERFS, because let's come to that later. Let's say I'm given two or three different MRCs, right?
Okay.
And I have cache hierarchy.
Okay.
So tell me roughly how you're going to interpret from from the MRCM and decide on the map.
Okay, so let's take one of these MRCs, let's say like this.
Yes.
And now the next thing I have is the ranges of cache sizes at every level. Like this is one range, so this is it, say for L1. This is a range for L2.
Okay.
And maybe there is more, and so on. So in this case, what I would say is, well, there is a knee at some value that is in the range that L1 typically services. So my provisioning, so if we look at mapping, then I have a single L1 point. I don't have a range.
Yeah.
I have a provisioning problem, I have a range.
Right.
And then my goal is to actually pick a point.
Yeah.
So I would, for instance, pick this point, and then I would pick this other point. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So for the provisioning case, for the mapping case, okay, I have a single L1 point. As long as the knee is below it, I would say, well, this ERSS node would map to that specific level because the size of the ERSS node is smaller than that cache level. So it would reside there. But there is a complication, right? Because there is also this question of rates. So if you have, when you have several workloads, this one workload is fine. One workload, this is fine. But when you have several workloads, you have also sort of a hierarchy of rates of various nodes at the same level of the tree, let's say. Then if you have a space only to fit a subset of those nodes, the ones that could actually map to that level would be the higher reuse rates, because they would naturally displace the lower reuse rates.
Mm-hmm.
And the lower reuse rates now have to go and sit in L2.
Yeah.
Right? Because they would be sitting in L2 if you run all of these workloads
right.
together.
Yeah,
it's easier to think about this in terms of the MRC, because the tree is kind of complicated.
Yeah, I'm still not concerned. I understand this, the concept behind it, but I don't. Okay, this makes a little more fun, okay? So now your question is. So
there are two questions, right? The first provisioning question is, how should I size these guys?
Yeah.
In terms of space and bandwidth. The problem I have is that I don't have a clear goal. What is the goal? I mean, what is the goal in the provisioning case? And is there a performance goal? Is there some other sort of goal? And how does it meet the goal? So yeah, I'm kind of stuck there.
Okay, I'll think about it now that I understand it a little bit better.
So I formalize some of these problems in section 3 and...
Yeah, no, in fact, this has been the biggest challenge for me. I've not been able to formalize any of the problems actually.
Yeah, my formalization is probably very loose relative to what you might be thinking about.
Yeah, I was trying to come up with very formal things and I just could not.
So for the holistic cache coverage management.
Yes.
Then I would assume that's like the third question. It's different from...
Yes,
that's
a dynamic problem.
Yes, it's
yeah.
A dynamic. So I've been thinking about, I haven't been able to read a lot, but I'm thinking about. So one question is, so it's maybe possible, so I'm thinking more in terms of how to address the performance problem when the
from the patch layer becomes automatic.
Like how to do finger pointing?
It's how the diagram is this. Yeah. How the finger pointing. The finger pointing, I'm not sure, maybe I haven't thought about that enough, but the finger pointing can be, if we know the ERS is, then we can, if we can actually estimate it online, then the finger point is not so difficult, like as long as systematic reverse problem of the provisioning, right? If I know that the summation of the ERS is greater, right, greater than the case size, then I know that's wrong. Right?
Let me tell you one thing, okay? This, whatever we're doing here, the key, there is one assumption that is really important to understand very well. We are assuming a certain intensity for the workload.
Mm.
The rates change when the intensity changes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you have an online web service. You can construct this MRC at some load. The good part of this observation is that the knees, the location of the knees don't change in the MRC.
Mm-hmm.
What changes is the height of the knees. Okay, so the x-axis is largely stable.
Okay.
But the y-axis shifts. What that means for these rates is that the rates will change, but the size of the node would be the same as the intensity changes. And we saw that in the ERSS paper, we actually point that out. Because one of the concerns with something like this is to say, well, does it really apply to online web services, which are, you know, dynamic intensity workloads?
Mm-hmm.
Do these MRCs continue to make sense, or do you need to sort of continuously retrain the whole system and relearn the MRCs? And what we show somewhere in this paper is the experiment. There's another paper. There's another paper that we published in NASCAR. That probably has this experiment. But the experiment basically,
okay,
for Rubis,
okay,
changes the intensity and looks at MRCs.
Okay.
And the MRCs actually are very interesting. So if you look at the MRC, smaller intensity looks like this.
Mm.
Increase the intensity, the MRC shape remains the same. It just gets bumped up higher. So which means that the knee points are preserved across the MRCs.
Okay.
That's what is being observed, or is this is possible to...
No, we saw it in our experiments.
So I see, when it gets faster, all that happens.
Yeah.
Intensity really means made faster somehow.
Yeah, so for instance, if Google gets 1,000 requests per second now, but next second it might get like 1,500 requests.
Yeah.
So if you look at the MRCs for one of their services, how does it change? So that's a useful property, right?
Yeah.
For some workloads, right?
Yeah.
The needs don't change. But what does change is the reuse and flood rates.
That's right. Yeah.
And where does that fit into our set of issues that we are looking at? It fits into the dynamic case, right? So that the third version of the problem, which is a holistic management, the dynamic.
Well, even for the static case, you're assuming some flood rate and reuse rate.
Yeah, which is the offline profile.
That's right.
Whatever we profile.
And you, based on what you told me, you can measure these two rates online.
Yes, you could measure it online, which is why we should, you know, be able,
right,
to do dynamic remapping.
Then based on them, then we can estimate the weightage. Right?
Yes.
And based on the weightage, based on the ERSS, right? I can know
the ERSS don't change.
Yeah,
right?
Don't change. Yes.
So
yes, then I can know which layer of the case hierarchy is oversubscribed.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
So
the finger pointing is, you're saying the finger pointing, given this, should not be too.
Yes,
hard.
That's what,
right,
I'm saying. Okay.
Yeah.
And then so I explain what
happened.
So
the ERSS doesn't change because you're in a different node in the tree, that's all. You're in a different phase, is it?
No, it does, the ERSS doesn't change because the ERSS, the size of the ERSS.
Ah,
the
size.
The size doesn't change, even as you change the intensity.
Right.
It's at the same
knee point, right? But Ming, there is one issue there,
okay.
Right? Because the oversubscription at one level might lead to oversubscription at other levels.
That's right. That's right.
So we need to find the finger pointing would need to address the root cause.
Yes. So I will. Yes, I thought about that too. Then I will say try to resolve the bottom right at the
lower pH level.
Or the very sort of highest pH.
Yeah.
How defined?
So,
yes.
So actually, this is why it was because of finger pointing that I added those two rates. Because when you see a flood and when you see some process flooding, all you know is that it's going to hurt us from something else, but you have no idea which ones. And so you have to sort of measure things at the other end, saying which ones are getting kicked out. And so that's what the purge rate or one of those rates tells you.
Yeah. So there is a problem there, right? Because we can only monitor a few quantities at the hardware level.
Right. But if you look at this Toronto paper, it seems like at least theoretically it's possible. You just have to decide later on how much, how low or high your sampling rate is and how many different things you want to measure.
What I'm saying is that the two quantities you added was the purge rate,
right,
and the drop rate.
Right.
The purge rate is the...
It's just good things that are getting... bad things that are getting cleared out. So that's okay.
Bad things that are getting cleared out, hard to measure. Because we don't know what is good or bad. We just
know that... Right, that's true. But the same thing happens for flood rates, right? I mean, you don't really know...
The flood rate can be approximated to miss rate. Because if you miss, you will bring something in, right? And that, if you miss a lot, okay, so if you miss a lot, then you would be bringing in items that potentially flood are flooding the cache. Because if they were not, then you won't be missing. So it works in the case of a standalone workload. I don't know if this argument works when you combine workloads.
Yeah.
But you can do it at least for a single workload, and I need to think about how do we generalize it to multiple workloads.
No, all those points are true. But what I'm saying is that when you're studying these behaviors, you want to assume that you have all the information that you need. And then once you understand which ones are going to be more critical, you can decide, okay, I don't need this or don't need that. But for now, to prepare the model, you really should assume as many parameters as possible.
That's the understanding I had when I saw those definitions, that
yeah.
you're not trying to say, okay, we can measure all of them.
Correct.
But you're basically saying to understand the concepts better, let's define some additional terms.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine.
And sampling also, so I don't know how well sampling has been studied. So that's another thing that could be looked at, saying which things can we estimate using sampling.
Yeah.
And are there good sampling techniques?
So that previous work from the Toronto guys, what they do, the key application of sampling is to get workload level information. Because getting workload level information without sampling is too much overhead.
Sure. Yeah.
What you get with low overhead is aggregate rates and not per workload rates.
Yeah, so to me even that also comes later, because again here we are assuming that we have 100% information about all the workloads. We try to see if we can build a model and then see if sampling can help us go with an approximate.
Yeah, I think even that needs to be very clear in the proposal, which is, well, what part of the proposal are we targeting towards model building exclusively versus practical questions? And
so foundations should be built with complete information.
Hmm.
Once you understand their dependencies, then you can say, okay, let's see how they can be approximated.
Yeah. Yeah, so
estimating those parameters should be completely a separate task from building the model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Ming, you said you had
two questions. Yeah. That I think it depends on the foundation tool is for remediation. One is so if I know that one workload is underperforming, then and if a high expire CPU cycles, they can potentially increase the CPU allocation to this underperforming application workload, and thereby increasing its reuse rate.
Yeah.
Okay, and also and the fire rate. Okay. So the question is if but it's possible to build a model between the performance and the fire rate, the reuse rate, the rate of this particular workload, given the rate of the other workloads are the same. Okay, that's one question. And the other question is that if there's no spare CPU cycle, then what I would have to consider to migrate the workload to different processor or different host. Right? The question is same. But given the workloads that that are already there, with the rates which are measured online, can I predict the performance of this workload?
Yes.
To be migrated.
Okay. So those are the questions you're formalizing.
I'm formalizing. If that's possible, then I can do that. Then I can use those techniques to increase CPU allocation to migrate the workload. Okay. So. I can come up say, with some machine learning techniques say, to try to create such a model online. And if in the foundation section there are some more
parameters,
some more concrete things there that would make my job more convincing. I would say.
Yeah.
Mm. Otherwise, maybe we need to have some preliminary data to show that such a model is possible.
Can we cite some other works where they say where they model performance as a function of cache size? Then we can say, okay, people have looked at performance as a function of cache size.
Mm.
What we are proposing is to make this model much more comprehensive by bringing in entire cache hierarchy.
That's a good point. Yeah, there might be
reuse rate.
There should be some work there. Let me look around. Yeah. I cannot think of at this moment.
I think the QClouds paper does.
That's not that. Really do that.
No?
It's using a it's only performance. It's using only CPU allocation to performance model, but it's using a multi-input multi-output model to implicitly capture the intention. So the given the cache size is already fixed, and it's not explicitly the model is not explicitly. To the
cache size. I see. Well, if you look at the ERSS work, and especially the other paper, that the Mascot's paper, that has the experiments which show well how you can change the effective cache size.
Mm.
For a specific workload and construct an MRC.
Mm.
It doesn't create a model, but the MRC is sort of a model, right? It's not an explicit performance model, it just tells you what the miss rate is. It doesn't tell you how the miss rate would map to actual performance.
Mm. Okay. Mm.
So it's part of a model.
It's probably, yeah, yes. Yeah. And the other related question is that model you're talking about is when this workload is running standalone, right?
Yeah.
It's how the interaction changes when these workloads are not, the rates are increasing, how would the wastage change considering the other workloads which have constant rates.
We already have formula that tells us that. We already have formula that tells us what is the wastage for a set of workloads, if we already know the reuse and flood rates for each of the workloads.
That's right, yeah, remember the equation. Okay.
Yeah, some flood rate divided by flood rate plus reuse rate of the target.
All the pairwise.
Times the ERSS and the...
Okay.
Yeah, so we already have the ability to predict wastage.
Okay.
Given knowledge about flood and reuse rates.
Yeah, that should be very useful. Yeah.
So, yeah, in fact, that's one of the questions, these incremental changes that I formulated from saying what happens if there are incremental changes in just one workload. And if you change either the reuse rate, flood rate, whatever, all these rates, and I forgot what the other one.
MRC.
The MRC, and then what happens if one of the one of the virtuals is removed or added.
Right. So, if one workload is removed, the wastage could probably be reduced.
Yeah, you're just going to remove.
The ERSS will certainly go down because you just lost one workload. A total ERSS.
Right.
But the wastage may remain the same or go up. Sorry, go down. It's not clear. Yeah, so what we do need is research agenda questions for the foundations component. And Giri, I've created some examples in the next section, so you could just copy those. My goal is to have, you know, all of these research questions explicit in the proposal so that if someone is reading it, they understand, you know, what we are proposing to do very clearly, right, versus what already exists.
Section 4, you also have a bullet for cash remapping. I thought that should belong to Section 5.
No, that's just, okay, yeah, maybe it will. I was just writing because I had it there.
Okay.
Maybe we can move it to Section 5. But
like 6. Yeah,
6.
And then if that's the plan, then maybe 6, the title of the 6 can change, you know, to make it more suited to dynamic.
So what I was thinking when I was writing this is that in this section, create some knobs or some mechanisms that the holistic management guy can use. But if you think this is better fit for that section, then we could move it there.
I'll decide that later. Yeah. Once I have most of the writing down.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, it has some. it would be used by holistic management, because here what I'm saying is that given an existing mapping and a subset of workloads that must be remapped. I'm not saying why, right? I'm just saying, okay, here is the goal. I want to remap a set of workloads for whatever reason. Perform remapping so that you minimize contention at targets. So you could use this as sort of a mechanism within a holistic management framework. Or we could move it to that section. Either way is fine. By the way, do you think this is kind of useful or interesting to put in the proposal? This observation here. I feel like we don't have enough space to talk about all the things. For instance, I don't even have that basic wastage formula anywhere in the proposal. And I just realized that I spent so much space on the preliminary work that I wasn't sure whether we would have enough space to talk about the rest of the stuff. Yeah.
How many pages have spent on preliminary work?
Maybe I could just, instead of actually talking too much about that, we could just have like a citation to that.
Yeah. Secondly, many of the proposed questions have been addressed even already in the preliminary work.
No. No. Like what?
But
you don't have any questions yet. Or at least I don't see any. I just see definitions.
No.
And that's in preliminary work. There are questions. Oh, there are questions, but yeah, you're right. There are some questions, but they're not in agenda form. So that's why.
So you're saying 3.1.1 is full on. That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
And that can definitely go to nature section. Right.
Which one?
That can be
preliminary work, if it's three or four.
You can have a preliminary section for each section.
Then it would
just stay out. Yeah, it depends on if you think it's too long. If it's really long, then maybe you should bring it outside of section.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's subsection of the foundation, right?
Yeah. Yeah, what I want there is just preliminary work of the foundation section.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just preliminary work of modeling contention.
Okay.
But that's where most of our preliminary work is, just modeling the contention. We don't have too much beyond that. So I'm hoping that we won't have much other preliminary work elsewhere.
Yes, I said in one of my messages that I think we need to spend it some space to explain how big wastage is.
Yeah, wastage is just in words, right? And we have one picture.
Words, but we have to show how big it is to show that it's worth.
This picture is not good enough because it has percentage. But actually, I mean, this is sort of underselling the problem. Like I mentioned, or tried to explain it in my email.
No, I think even if somewhere in the introduction, if you were able to say that wastage under this and this and this conditions, it could be as high as 10%.
No, it's more like 100%.
Which could translate to this much in terms of power. So if you can turn it into, you know, X billion dollars per year for just Google or something like this, I think that it would have a bigger impact.
Hmm.
That's
true.
Power
and cost.
It's not just showing some wastage numbers.
Yeah.
When I read your summary, the wastage should be highlighted somehow. So, It's not the time, it's not in technical bold. Something first, probably soon.
Yeah.
And I know somewhere you do say that this anomaly with the wastage has been observed by other people, but it still doesn't matter because the proposal really, really rests on it.
Yeah. Yeah, wastage, although other people have observed wastage, but they haven't quantified it.
And so I think it should go into the summary too.
Yeah.
And another question about summary is, you mentioned both performance and power QoS. What's different from your perspective?
Well, performance maximization is, let's say, miss ratio minimization, miss rate minimization,
okay.
Just like throughput in terms
or
of CPI.
But QoS
is meeting specific performance goals. And hoping that the holistic management would bring out the QoS aspects better.
Oh, okay. So the way I read it is, what about performance and QoS goals? I thought it's performance goals and QoS goals.
At the same time.
But isn't performance goals the same as QoS goals? If the QoS is starting from performance.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't really want to say that. I want to say something.
So, yeah, workload performance is probably not the right word. You probably want to say cash performance.
Hmm. Yeah. Right. Absolutely right. I wish we had 2 more weeks for this proposal. You know, we are down to the last week, more or less. Yeah, usually I need 2 months to read proposal. This time,
I have one Hispanic PhD and one Hispanic undergraduate.
Okay, 1+1.
1+1.
Okay, and what about you, Ming? You have several, right?
Yeah, so I give you the numbers.
Although I guess thought. Female also counted.
Yeah, female counted.
So,
yeah.
So make that 2 then for PhD. So
plus 1 female.
Two, yeah.
Okay.
Then you're saying Hispanic may just be minority and underrepresented person.
But in the final summary, you're going to explain the impact a little bit, right? Very nice kind of thing.
Sorry?
The impact section, broad impact, is a bit of thinking.
It's a bit too.
Yeah, in the summary, it's thin because I didn't have any space.
Summary is okay. I think it's the other one that needs to be.
Okay.
Yeah, the broader impact, yeah. I have kind of this 1.2, and that's probably the best I can do. I mean, that's. I don't think there's more. I don't think we'll have more space than this.
Mm-hmm.
Like one or two paragraphs.
But
in
the summary, can save some space and help.
Yeah, I think if we can reduce some of the other parts of the summary, we could expand the. Yeah, you're right. I think expand this. Possible. Okay. I think for broader impact, the key is record. If we
right.
already have a record, we'll have much. No one will really question us all that much, and we do. So,
yeah.
As long as we say we are doing this, on a regular basis, we don't have to sell too much in broader impact.
No, the only place it really helps is all these reviewers have to write.
Yes.
Something in the review.
Yes.
They need to go and find something that they can easily steal.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So you need to make their life easier.
Yes.
That's true. I want some, besides the sections, I want something from you for results from prior NSF support.
Yeah.
Well,
essentially those two papers that Marjorie just submitted.
And yeah, we can do that. And Ming, if you can give me like a paragraph with references.
Yeah.
That would be good. Okay, other than that, what we can try and do is take like a step by step approach to the writing. And my suggestion is let's come up with the agenda questions first.
Okay.
And then we can fill out the sort of solutions.
Yeah.
And that way, Ming can actually use some of the questions that we answered in previous sections as knobs and mechanisms that he can use for answering holistic management questions.
That's fine. No, I understand. I understand.
I think given you already have many of it there, but it's just lots of questions.
Just stream of consciousness that needs to be structured.
Yeah. And Ming, if you can sort of come up with your questions in parallel, I think what we can do is figure out, you know, just the descriptions can use some of the questions
that
we have.
Right.
Will be
or not. Yeah.
Okay. So let's target, you know, having the questions at least done by sometime tomorrow or early day after tomorrow. And then we can start filling out our respective sections a bit more.
Should we meet again?
We should meet maybe on Wednesday.
You guys are both here every day?
Mostly, I'm going to be here every day this week.
We meet for half hour every evening, just to touch base.
Okay, that sounds good.
Before 5 p.m.
Let me see what I have.
What is that?
Oh, that's the background.
Yeah.
Oh. Does it have a purpose?
No. We're just streaking around. Just want to see.
I have something on Wednesday at 4 o'clock, but tomorrow is okay.
Yeah, Wednesday afternoon I teach. So, also, Wednesday morning would be better. Or before 2 a.m., before 2 p.m.
Wednesday before 2 may not work for me. So, what time do you teach on Wednesday?
From 2 to 4:30. Or sometimes you need a little bit later than 4:30. Yeah.
I see.
One.
So, you might have to skip Wednesday. But let's do. Maybe let's do tomorrow,
okay.
Same time, 4 o'clock, and then Thursday.
Tomorrow is good, yeah.
Tomorrow, 4 o'clock?
Yeah, but Wednesday I teach from 2:30.
Yeah, I think Wednesday we're skipping anyway, Gibby.
Okay.
We'll do Thursday. Thursday.
Yeah, so then every other day is fine, yeah.
Then we'll do Thursday at 4?
No, Thursday I teach from 3:30.
Oh, I thought you said Wednesday.
Okay.
You meant Thursday.
Thursday.
So Wednesday, Ming is teaching.
Yeah, I think come at 4:30. Maybe you can start early without me first.
Let's do Wednesday at 5.
Maybe I can ask my wife to pick up the kids. And
okay.
Wednesday later. And then you can with her first.
Okay, then Thursday.
So this might be the better thing.
Let's just
Wednesday. Let's meet every other day, Wednesday and Friday.
Okay, Wednesday and Friday.
Okay.
So Wednesday at 5, and
okay.
Then
Friday. Should be
Friday is open, right?
Yeah.
Friday is sort of. Open.
Should we do 4?
Yeah, Friday 4 is good.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. It's better to meet every other day.
Yeah.
Okay, Wednesday at 5 then. Yeah. Friday at 4. And the plan is to, by Wednesday, we should have all the questions lined up. And so at least we'll know if you're missing any questions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Are there any gaps in the research agenda? And then once we have that sorted out, then we should be free to do our independent writing.
Okay.
Okay.